This is a Truth for Today recording, and Oscar M. Baker is speaking, and this is a continuation of our study in the book of Revelation. We have covered chapters 1 to 7 in the past, and our last recording was chapter 20, verse 1 to chapter 21, 2. So now we are ready to take up chapter 21, 3. So if you want to follow and read and check with me as we go, that is fine. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them. And they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them, and be their God. Now this, of course, is a glorious prophecy. John is giving this, as we have studied before, about AD 43, during the Acts time, and to seven churches in Asia Minor, which existed at that time. A message was sent to them, and these things were for them. Of course, necessarily, since Israel were set aside, divorced at the end of Acts, but then this prophecy was not all fulfilled in that short time of 43 to 64. And so there is a central part of the book to be fulfilled yet. I will explain that somewhat, but we want you to know that the first three chapters, especially, and significant at that time to those churches and for them at that time, not some future. There is nothing to indicate in the whole thing that these churches will ever be revived and that this prophecy be fulfilled to them. So keep that in mind, but it'll save us some difficulties. Now John here heard a voice out of heaven, that is, from somewhere above. And behold, the tabernacle, the dwelling place of God, is with men. And he shall dwell with them, they shall be his people. So this is speaking very definitely of the millennial period. And his people are Israel. Remember that the millennium is particularly for Israel. The 12 tribes will be ruling over, judging the nations, with each of the 12 apostles at the head of those, each of those tribes. And it's going to be very realistic. It'll be things going on this earth as usual, except that there's going to be a different kind of a government. We're using the word government as an all-inclusive word. We could call it a reign, we could call it most anything, rulership. But the great ruler, the Lord himself, will dwell with them, be here in presence at that time on the earth. And they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God. Now, for a person who is rather little in his thinking, not imaginative, and does not understand the attributes of God and of Christ, this would bother him. But if Christ is with him, God is with him. Isn't it? Isn't he God? And he shall be their God. I think a little something is hinted at just in that. In past times, Israel had had their lapses. They had made the mistakes and stubbed their toe and followed after other gods. But now, in the millennium, the Lord Jesus Christ will be their God. This is going to be a little different from their wanderings and so forth in the past. And then it says that God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, quoting from the Old Testament. And there shall be no more death, neither sorrow or crying, neither shall be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. This will be a resurrected Israel. They will be in resurrected bodies, glorious bodies. And in these bodies, there will be no more death. Death can't touch them. They will have sorrow. They won't be crying about things. Won't be any more pain in new bodies. A lot of folks are welcome that. That's among the Jews now, remember. Now, we don't have any part in this particular war. We have something even more glorious, but that's another subject. For the former things are passed away. The former things, going clear back to the promise made to Abraham, which is the beginning of Israel's existence, really, up to the divorcement at the end of Acts. That's all the former times. And then those were former things. And that's passed away. Well, I think a lot of them can be very thankful for that. And he that sat upon the throne said, Behold, I make all things new. And he said unto me, Write, for these words are true and faithful. This is one of the variations of the rule that was made to John in the first place. He was to write the things which he saw. But here he is to write something that he has heard. Behold, I make all things new. That'll be a glorious day for Israel. So all the trials, tribulations they've gone through, the faithful ones suffering quite often death, and now resurrected. And here they are, all things new, no sorrow, pain, and the like. And so John is told to write this, for these words are true and faithful. And he said unto me, It is done. Now, at one time, the Lord said on Calvary, It is finished. But here is one where we find that it is done. We find other places where that is mentioned too. Not finished, but done. A great redemptive purpose was finished at Calvary. But here are things that have been done to give these people this perfection so that they have. A result, of course, of what happened on Calvary. I am Alpha and Omega. Those of you who do not know Greek, those are the first and the last letters of the Greek alphabet. And so he would say, I am the A and the Z, the first and the last, the beginning and the end. I will give unto him that is athirst of the fountain of the water of life freely. Oh, these folks will have living water. Not particularly to keep them alive. They've already been resurrected and have new bodies and so on. But I think there's something a little bit deeper there. Possibly more than we might even comprehend at times. Now, drinking this living water is rather a symbol, rather a figure of speech. I think that when the Lord said, those that are thirst, let them come unto me, and he was speaking the very same thing. And what it really means is this, that their spiritual perceptions and life will be continually renewed all during this millennial period. Now, see what you make of it. He that overcometh, and of course the book of Revelation, particularly about overcomers, he that overcometh shall inherit all things. And I will be his God, and he shall be my son, not my child, but my son. This is adulthood. These are things that are going beyond the childhood of Israel. We always call them the children of Israel. But here, that term is left, and they are sons of God through their relationship to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, or Israel. And so, they can have all the blessings, and that is what this is really talking about. Figuratively speaking, blessings. Everything that is good. He that overcometh and inherit all things, and I'll be his God, and he shall be my son, and then he goes on to say, but the fearful and unbelieving, and the abominable, and murderers, whoremongers, sorcerers, idolaters, all liars, shall have their part in the lake which burneth with fire and brimstone, which is a second death. Sometime, take a little study of the second death as it occurs in these chapters here, about five times. Put it on the structure if you can, and so on. Figure it out. I think that you will come to this conclusion, but you had better do it for yourself, not take my word for it. You will come to the conclusion when you see the various items in that, that it is a figure of speech which means it's the end. For instance, death and hell are cast into the lake of fire. Well, if death and hell are abstract things, they're not things that you can burn with fire. And so it has to be figurative. That if they're cast into the lake of fire, using that term, that's the end of them. There won't be any death nor hell anymore. Well now, the lake of fire is not hell. Hell is simply the grave, the abiding place of the dead. And death is simply a cessation of being, a lack of life, the opposite of life. And all of these folks who take part in these things, they're said to simply cease to be at the end of them. Not only that, but all such things will be forgotten. No remembrance of those things. Now, that's pretty hard to imagine, isn't it? But those things never come to their mind anymore. Aren't there things in your life? Aren't there things that you remember that you wish that you could never have them come to your mind again? Well, in resurrection, no difference what sphere you're in, whether in the millennium, or the New Jerusalem, or in the heavenly places, that'll be true. No remembrance of those things. Our minds will be cleansed of the things that we find that went through our minds and thoughts in our life here on this earth. And I'm thankful for that. We cannot help having those things go through our minds. I know there's a saying that illustrates that you can't keep the birds from flying over your head, but you can keep them from building nests in your hair. And so evil thoughts and the like can come into our mind, we'll just pass them on. Don't let them build any nests there. Good advice. And there came unto me one of the seven angels, which had the seven vials, or bowls, full of wrath. Last plague. I read the wrong thing in there, didn't I? Well, I guess the same thing. The seven last plagues. And talk with me, saying, come hither, I will show thee the bride, the Lamb's wife. Now, in the first place, vials and plagues makes you think that they might be something of chemical nature. And quite often they were. Just study the plagues of Egypt. And there, of course, are 10. And they fit a pattern. And very similar in some ways. And, of course, in that case, those 10 plagues were aimed at the gods that the Egyptian worshipped. To show them that their gods in their time of trouble were absolutely unable to help them, to do anything for them. God, wood, stone, all of those things and so on. They couldn't lift a finger to help those Egyptians in their time of trouble. They were to realize that there was a God in heaven, as Nebuchadnezzar finally had to learn after all his suffering. And it does sometimes take some suffering for people to realize that there's a God outside of themselves. I say that advisedly, but I think that you would do well to think it over, that there is a God outside of themselves. Too many people worship themselves, or have a God made out of their own imagination. And that's true also of Christendom. Do you find two people that have the same idea of God in their mind? No. That's worth thinking about. After all, the God we worship is a God in our mind. Well, how did he get in our mind? Through our imagination and our making up something? Or is he in our mind because of the Word, which is truth? Where do we get it? Now, these are things that are simple to utter, but they certainly have depth. And they mean a lot, and they mean a lot to the Christian, and they mean a lot to these overcomers that we're talking about. And this angel talked with me, saying, come here, and I will show thee the bride, the Lamb's wife. I want you to notice the usage of the word lamb. It's used here quite a little bit in connection with the millennial kingdom and so on. But when you come to the latter part here where we have the New Jerusalem, New Earth, you'll find no other name for the Lord Jesus Christ than the Lamb. That's significant. The Lamb always suggests a sacrifice for sin that has been done away with. I could go on further with that, but that's not our topic right now. And so the angel said, come hither and I'll show thee the bride, the Lamb's wife. And he carried me away in the spirit. I want you to notice that. In the spirit. You'll find in the first part of the book that he was in the island, Patmos, by spirit. He carried there, as Philip had been carried by spirit, from one place to another. And Enoch also was carried somewhere by the spirit. And so here he says, he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain. Probably Everest, if you're going to be little. Well, I imagine it in this vision that John has, that there are mountains in that vision higher than the Mount Everest. Because you can see from the description here, and showed me that great city, the Holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God. A city, and descending out of heaven. Now, isn't Halley's Comet, or something like that? And remember that when you measure that city, the measurements are given here in the book of Revelation. You'll find it is going to be a great cube, and close to 1,500 miles on each edge. Remember, it's going to be resurrected people living at altitude will have nothing to do with them, with their living, so on. They'll be beyond that. And in the new earth, I don't know about climate conditions and that anyway, and also the gravity and so forth, how much that'll exert itself, and especially will exert itself on people that have been resurrected from the dead with new bodies. You see, we have a lot of problems to try to take this thing literally and explain it. So there's a lot we don't know. And here it is this city coming down from God out of heaven. And remember, that is not from the heaven that we have now above us, because that will disappear before this. This is where you are just, yes. This is where we have the present earth and heaven passed away. And it's a new heaven, new earth he's talking about, you see. And so, earthlings, as we think of them, never see that. Now, this is spoken of in times past, and the place where it comes from is a new heaven, not the present heaven, and not the heaven that then was, that is, before the flood. Before the overthrow that Peter speaks about. But a new heaven. And what it will be like, I don't know. The present heaven is spoken of as a curtain or tent stretched out, under which God dwells in the flesh at one time and gave himself to redeem this world from its iniquities. In other words, it was a tabernacle, a tent, in which God dwelt to work out the scheme of redemption. So you see, the little tabernacle out in the wilderness, the temple in Jerusalem, are simply little miniatures, replicas of things that extended far above all humans, actually. And this city had the glory of God, and her light was likened to a stone, most precious, even like a jasper stone, clear as crystal. Her light, I want you to notice that, there's more about that. Her light, that city is a shining light, and had a wall, great and high. Now somebody wrote to me just a while back and said, well, why do they need a wall and all these things like gates and so forth, because there's going to be no warfare. Well, now, walls and gates and so on around the city were for other things besides simply defending themselves. They denoted grandeur, beauty, and security. They had a meaning. And this city is great. It's had a wall great and high, at 12 gates. And at the gates, 12 angels. An angel standing guard at each gate. And names written therein, which are the names of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. So there'd be a gate then for each tribe. Now elsewhere you'll find those tribes named here in the book of Revelation. It might be a little surprise to find that they differ a little bit, but really, if you'll go into the study of the 12 tribes and where they are named, you'll be kind of surprised that there's hardly two times that the same ones are named. Or in the same order. On the east, 3 gates. On the north, 3 gates. On the south, 3 gates. On the west, 3 gates. And the wall of the city had 12 foundations. One right on top of another. 12 foundations. And in them, in those foundations, were the names of the 12 apostles. Of the Lamb. Now, of course, you will not find the name of Judas there. Not that he was lost, but he lost something. He lost his bishopric. If he had been faithful, he could have been one of these. But evidently, somebody else takes his place, Matthias. Those names will be on those 12 foundations, sitting under those great walls of the city. And he that talked with me had a golden reed to measure the city and against the house, and the wall thereof. So we're doing a little surveying here. Going to measure and get the dimensions. Rather interesting. And the city lieth four square. A great cube. And the length is as large as a breadth. And he measured the city with a reed 12,000 furlongs. The length and the breadth and the height of it are equal. And he measured the wall thereof, 144 cubits, according to the measure of a man, that is, of the angel. And the building of the wall of it was of jasper, and the city was pure gold, likened to clear glass. Now, scientists used to hoot at that and say, well, that's all purely imaginary. Gold is not glass, it isn't transparent. The gold can be refined to the place now that it can be refined and pounded out and be as transparent as window glass. Well, God knew more than a scientist did. See, he usually does, doesn't he? When we go to pitting our puny little minds against his knowledge and so on, well, we take great pride in our scientific knowledge. But all of it is just puny clay stuff beside the things that God has done and will do. Man in his imagination has done some wonderful things in his own eyes. When we look at this revelation area and see the great things as for just a new earth, not mentioning the heaven of heavens, which is beyond all that, and which we have no knowledge of. Well, it makes us wonder. Makes one feel rather small. And the foundations of the wall of the city were garnished with all manners of precious stones. The first foundation was jasper, the second sapphire, the third a chalcedony, the fourth an emerald, the fifth sardonyx, the sixth sardius, the seventh crystallite, and the eighth beryl, and ninth a topaz, the tenth a chrysoprasus, the 11th a jacinth, and the 12th an amethyst. Beautiful gems. When some of our lapidaries, that is gem cutters and fitters, and they love to have a collection of those. And the 12 gates for 12 pearls. Now either those gates were mighty small, or the oysters from which these pearls came were mighty large. Or do they have to come from oysters? That's about the only pearls we know of. Every several gate was of one pearl, one big pearl, and the street of the city was pure gold, as it were, transparent glass. Again, we have this speaking of glass, transparent. Well, we have in the book of Hebrews, in the 11th chapter, a man who looked for this city, Abraham. It was revealed to him. But we find one long after Abraham had also had the hope of it. And he said in one of his songs, the last verse, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Also, in John's Gospel, the Lord talks about his Father's house in which there are many mansions. And certainly a house or city that big could have many dwelling places. And there will be a lot of people to occupy them. And I don't believe that there will be any rooms up there unoccupied. The place will be prepared exactly for those who are to be in it. He told the disciples, I go and prepare a place for you. And of course all the believers are saying, and I saw no temple therein. For the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are the temple of it. no need anymore when God dwells within for a temple for God to dwell in. Remember that when Solomon built his great temple and he was giving the dedication of it, he realized, he knew about these things. And he said, how can God dwell in this little temple, this measly little thing I have made, when even the heaven of heavens, the heavens and the heaven of heavens cannot contain him? Solomon began to get a little picture of it, didn't he? And the city had no need of the sun, neither of the moon to shine in it. For the glory of God did lighten it, and the Lamb is a light thereof. And this is taking you right back to a symbol of it in the old tabernacle in the wilderness. The Shekinah glory as well in the Holy of Holies. Now that is a light that has no shadow. This is something very strange. And Ezekiel said, as he saw it leave, never to come back again until these future times. Yeshua had so failed that God no longer could dwell among them in their Shekinah glory. They had so miserably failed. And so there we have a picture of the new Jerusalem, the city. And what artist could ever attempt to paint that picture? Who could ever describe it in detail? We just wonder. And the nations of them that are saved shall walk in the light of it. So that light will shine out over all the earth. An effulgent light. No need of the moon or the sun. And the kings of the earth do bring their glory and honor into it. Now you can see a picture. Here is Israel, the central figure on the earth, in a great new Jerusalem on this new earth. No water, no trees, no vegetation, only gold, silver, and other precious metals and precious stones are mentioned. There's no need of food in those resurrected bodies. No need of water. And water, after all, is a destructive agent brought about the downfall, the destruction of our cosmos in the first place. And so here we have all things made new and perfect. And in our particular condition, our predicament we're in, and our thoughts and our experiences, this all has to be said in a way that we can sort of comprehend. This isn't all the glory of it. And the gates of it shall not be shut at all by day, for there shall be no night there. So then it is told that the gates will never be shut. Well, what do they have the gates for then? Somebody asked. Well, this is a picture of the glory, glorious things of God. And remember that this city was called, when we started this, was called the Bride. And it's decked like a bride. Well, why shouldn't it be? For while we find that this city, in it, dwells Israel, including David and Abraham, the father of the nation. And so, when you think of that, it is going to be a great and a complete thing. We can't estimate the population that might live in a city like that. Of course, we have no idea of how much room each one will have. We don't know. We don't know the exact way it is constructed, except just simply the outer dimensions. We find that there's a street, and there certainly must be other things like that too, and not just one solid apartment building. And so the nations will bring their glory and honor into it. And there shall in no wise enter into it anything that defileth, neither whatsoever worketh abomination, or maketh a lie. But they, only they, which are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Now I want you again to remember this, that this is strictly concerning Israel. I know that there are songs written concerning this, and especially one, the Holy City. And it's a thrilling song for people to sing and entertain them and so on, but it's not our hope. I don't ever expect to see it. I have a hope far beyond that. What about you? Ever think about it? Remember, this is inside the universe yet. And this comes down to a new earth from a new heaven. The present earth and heavens are unclean. Why, even the moon, just a bunch of rock and dust. Mars isn't much better, according to what we've found. In fact, as far as we're able to probe yet, out into the distance, way out to back to the end of our own particular universe, and there's ruin and desolation, storms, molten rock, and such things as that. Temperatures almost unbelievable. And that makes us appreciate our little old earth, as fragile as it is. But remember that there's nobody going to be there except those who are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. And the Lamb is a relation to Israel. And so it's all, any Israelites that are written in that Book of Life. You or I or anybody else has any part in it. That's living today. Because Israel is set aside today and no Israelite today. If he could prove it, he would want, which is not likely, or have any part in these things, because they've been set aside for the present time. And those who are set aside for this time from AD 64 to now, even though they might have a Jewish ancestry, they can't prove it, because the records have all been burned up when the temple was burned. No man can prove he's a Jew today. And people keep insisting and asking me if prophecies are being fulfilled these days. Just yesterday, those questions are asking, but we're not living in prophetic times. I know I have seen all of this go on. I've heard it preached that way back years ago that the Kaiser might be the beast of the Revelation. And then maybe it was somebody else. And then some people began to think that maybe it was Hitler. And you just named it. People are always guessing and wondering about that. But there won't be any guessing when these folks come on the scene. I can remember hearing lectures on the mark of the beast. And when they first put the fasces, the rods and the axe, on our American dime, why, all up and down our calamity haulers were telling us this was accepting the mark of the beast. How do they know? It's just simply an Italian symbol. It's not anything universal. Oh, we've had other things. I just mentioned that one. We've had other things, but it makes men money and makes them popular, and the people listen to them because they have something sensational to talk about, you see. So you can invent most anything and talk about it and pocket the dollars. Well, I have just time here to start in chapter 22, the last chapter of the book. And he showed me a pure river of water of life. Now don't ask me what water of life be like. I don't know. Clear as crystal, proceeding out of the throne of God and of the Lamb. So somewhere in view, where everybody can see it, there's a throne of God and the Lamb. And from that throne is a pure river of water of life, pure as crystal. In the midst of the street of it, and on either side of the river, where there is a tree of life, which bear 12 manner of fruits, and yielded her fruit every 6 months, and in the leaves of the tree were the healing of the nations. Now the question comes up, is this actually water as we know it? Or is it symbolic of something? And in an earth where there's no water, actually, which is an agent of destruction, made up of two elements, hydrogen and oxygen, H2O, what part would it have in a perfect place like that, when it can be broken down? Water is not stable, particularly. Now, when we look at all of these things that are mentioned in here, all of these stones and so forth, we're talking about stable things, things that do not change or form easily, and the gold, so forth. And here then we have a tree of life that bear 12 manner of fruits, and yields of fruit every month, and the leaves of the tree for the healing of the nations. I can see only in this a figurative idea, that these are symbols that stand for something, a reality which they have. But are they really actually trees which do bear fruit that we can eat as we do today? Well, there's a question we have to make and face sometime or other, but we don't have to settle it. But in that particular environment that they have at that time, you can't imagine fruits as we know them today. Because in that environment, nothing can spoil. And the fruits that we know in our environment can spoil. And the leaves of the trees are, that we know, can wither and die. But here you're going to be in an atmosphere where things don't wither and die. And not only that, but water, as we know it, is very near a universal solvent that can dissolve most anything in water. And here is an environment which cannot be dissolved. So then why have a water, literally as we have today, which can dissolve things? I think that we have to think twice and remember that these things are highly pictorial, using earthly terms here in a particular relationship to express great spiritual things which we cannot now comprehend. There shall be no more curse. That'll be out. Well, there's sin gone and so on, there'll be no need for curse with it. Wouldn't be such thing as that. But the throne of God and the Lamb shall be in it, and his servants shall serve him. And they shall see his face, and his name shall be in their forehead. Now, again, I say we just can't comprehend this, but I know that a lot of it is figurative, and yet it is far beyond our knowledge of the material things that we have. There shall be no night there. They shall need no candle, neither light of the sun, for the Lord God giveth them light, and they shall reign forever and ever. I want to speak of that light again, the Shekinah glory, which shone in the Holy of Holies of the tabernacle. This was a light which cast no shadow. You can't hide in the shadows. In that light, I won't be in it. It's an effulgent light. Now, men have imagined about it, they've talked about it, they've tried to invent something like that, but the very fact that they have to make a light will limit it, and it cannot be an effulgent light as that which comes from God. Now, we will have to stop here and take up the subject the next time.